Honored today to hear our first year from Mrs. Zamira Ozarowski. Mrs. Ozarowski is an alumnus of Stern College, which is important, of course, and a member of the faculty of the Samuel H. Wang Yeshiva University High School for Girls, known as Central. She's also a graduate of the Nishmat Program for Certification as a Halachic Advisor and served as the Program Director at the Fifth Avenue Synagogue Beit Midrash. She continues to give adult education shiurim around the tri-state area, and her topic today is Yosef and his plot. What were his goals?
A few weeks ago, in my 11th grade Parshas Vayikra class, we were learning about the prohibition of lo tikom, not taking revenge. I decided to look online to see if I could find any interesting stories or articles on the subject in order to make class more exciting for my students. As I was surfing the web, I came across a most fascinating website. It's called RevengeLady.com. RevengeLady.com. You can look it up when you get home. This is an entire website devoted to the art of taking revenge. Revenge Lady claims that revenge is healthy. You're teaching people to behave better. At the same time, you're getting icky, poisonous feelings out of your system once and for all. What could be healthier? You're helping to bring the scales of justice back into balance and restore order to the universe. Revenge is also excellent self-therapy. She then goes on to list the rules of revenge. Some of these include the punishment should always fit the crime, and also let your creativity blossom. Be original. Give your mark an experience they'll never, ever forget. Also on this website are archives of all the best revenge stories she has ever heard. Needless to say, I decided that this was not exactly the message I wanted to bring into my class. At first glance, we would all agree that there's something extremely wrong with whoever created this website. But let me ask you a question. How is Revenge Lady any different than Yosef HaTzadik? If you look at the Yosef story, the main question that jumps out at you is, what in the world is Yosef trying to do? He seems to have a plan, but what his motives and underlying intentions are is completely unclear. Nowhere. Not when he first begins his charade, and not at the end, when he finally reveals himself to his brothers, are we ever told by the Torah what Yosef is trying to do. Can you hear me if I leave it like this? All right. Yosef's plot is a very complex one, involving many different stages. Before beginning our analysis of the story, let's first do a quick run through of what's going on. You turn in your source sheet to the third page, where it says overview of the Yosef story. We're not going to read the whole thing inside, obviously, but you'll just have it in front of you just to give you self a reminder of the story. So basically, it starts out in Perek Mem Bet. The brothers come down to Mitzrayim to get food, and little do they know that the Egyptian leader that they're coming to ask for food is their long-lost brother, Yosef. Yosef accuses them of being spies. Right, he sends them to jail, and he decides that he's going to keep Shimon hostage while they have to go back and bring Binyamin back to him. While they're still in jail, the brothers at that point recognize that this is a punishment for them having sold Yosef 22 years ago. Before they leave, Yosef puts money in their bags. The brothers find it on the way back, and they're very scared. Right, they return home. Yaakov refused to send Binyamin. He doesn't want to lose another son. Right, and then finally, famine gets so bad that they have no food, so Yaakov agrees to send Binyamin. They come back down to Mitzrayim again with Binyamin. They have a special meal with Yosef, at which point Yosef gives presents to all the brothers and gives five times as many presents to Binyamin. He sends them off in peace, but plants a silver goblet in Binyamin's bag. The authorities find it, and Yosef wants to take Binyamin as prisoner. Yehuda pleads with Yosef to let the other brothers take Binyamin's place as slaves, and then finally Yosef reveals himself. So again, the question that we're trying to answer is, what is Yosef doing here? Why is he dragging his brothers through this whole long-winded scheme? One would have expected him to be excited to see his brothers and to have told them right away that he is their long-lost brother. Why does he put on a whole charade? Doesn't he care about his father, who has been waiting for him for the past 22 years? Why prolong his agony? It just doesn't seem right. What was the point? And many of the commentaries grapple with this question. We're going to discuss today four different approaches to this story. Approach number one, punishment. On the surface level, it seems like Yosef is simply trying to take revenge. Right? His brothers did a pretty terrible thing to him, and now it's time for him to get them back. Finally, he's in this position of power, and he can give them what they truly deserve. But morally, we have a problem with this. It just doesn't seem like what we would expect from Yosef HaTzadik. Maybe from Revenge Lady, but not from Yosef. Right? And even though it's true that our forefathers have made mistakes in the past, to spend two parshios detailing the specifics of his revenge tactics and then never ever seeing him being rebuked for it seems not to be correct. Also, you'll notice in the story that there are three separate places where Yosef simply cannot contain himself and he breaks down and cries. That's not really the typical reaction you would expect from somebody who's reveling in his revenge. Interestingly, though, there are two major commentaries who do take this approach, though they modify it somewhat. The Barbanel writes that this was meant to be a punishment. But Yosef doesn't just choose any random punishment. He makes sure that it fits their crime perfectly, measure for measure. If you look in source number one in the Barbanel, we're not going to do the first paragraph, go to the second paragraph where the bracket is, in the first line. It says, V'lazeh hitnaheg Yosef imahem mida keneged mida. And therefore Yosef acts with them mida keneged mida, measure for measure. Ki lo hira imahem befoa. He doesn't actually harm them in actions. Aval b'tzar machshvatam. He just harms them in their thoughts. Kishem shehim lo asu lo ra. Just like they didn't actually do anything bad to him. Aval tiaro oto b'chashvam l'hara lo. They just pained him in the fact that they wanted to do bad to him. V'elokim chashva l'tova. And Hashem wanted to make it good. What does he mean by this? He's saying is that the brothers truly intended to do bad to their brother. They wanted to sell him as a slave. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to hurt him. But what happened? Hashem didn't make it become bad, right? He makes it work out for the good. Yosef is sold down to Mitzrayim. He becomes this great leader of Mitzrayim and is able to provide food for his brothers. So nothing bad actually happens. But they intended for something bad to happen. And therefore, they don't deserve a complete punishment, but they do deserve somewhat of a punishment. And therefore, what does he do? He doesn't actually harm them. He just talks to them in a very scary way so that they're scared something is going to happen, but nothing bad comes of it in the end. And the Barbanel goes on, I didn't put it in here, but he goes on to explain how every single thing Yosef does in his plot is really very carefully thought out. It's mida keneged mida, right? They accused him of gossiping about him, so therefore he accuses them of being a spy. Right? They threw him into a pit, so he throws Shimon into jail. They sold him as a slave, so he takes Binyamin as a slave. Everything is very thought out. It's mida keneged mida. So it's very nice that he manages to find a way to punish them measure for measure. But why is he doing this? Is it because he wants the feeling of satisfaction of punishing them, taking revenge? Of course not. So the Kli Yakar explains, source number two, the end of the line, Umasha tiyer tachav, the fact that he pains his brother, asa kol zeh, he did all this, why? L'marek avonam, to cleanse their sins. That they had sold their brother. Their sin is so great it cannot be bared. And the only way that it can ever be erased is by cleansing it through Yisurin, through troubles. Mida keneged mida, in a way of mida keneged mida. Okay, so the Kli Yakar explains that this is all for good intentions. Yet despite these good intentions, we are still left with a very pressing question. And that is, why does Yosef feel like it is his responsibility to dole out this onesh to his brothers? Isn't that usually a job we would relegate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So that is approach number one. Approach number two, fulfilling his dreams. Many, many years ago, Yosef had two dreams. Right? In one dream, he and his brothers were harvesting wheat. Their 11 sheaves bowed down to his sheaf. In the second dream, 11 stars, the sun and the moon all bowed down to him. And when he had these dreams many years ago, the idea that his family would all come bowing down to him seems somewhat preposterous. But as his brothers approach him now, gingerly beseeching the second in command in Egypt for a bit of food. Suddenly, the pasuk says, "Vayiskar Yosef et ha'chalamot asher chalam lahem." Yosef remembers his dreams. He thinks back to his dreams, and he realizes that they can very easily be fulfilled now. The Ramban writes, source number 3. "Vayiskar Yosef et ha'chalamot asher chalam lahem." Yomar ha'katuv, Torah is telling us, "Ki berot Yosef et achav." When Yosef sees his brothers bowing down to him, Zachar kol ha'chalamot asher chalam lahem. He remembers all the dreams that he had dreamt to them. V'yada, he knows shelo nitkayim echad mehem b'pam hazot. He knows that neither of them have been fulfilled yet. Why not? I hear what you're saying, but and who's missing? Binyamin, right? The 11 brothers are not there yet. He knows in the explanation of his dream that all of his brothers are going to bow down to him first, according to the first dream. How does he know that? Because it says, we are all gathering the sheaves. When he says we are doing it, it's implying all 11 of his brothers. The second time, thank you. The sun and the moon and all 11 stars are going to bow down to him. Since Binyamin wasn't with them yet, therefore he comes up with this whole entire plot in order to bring down Binyamin so that the first dream can come true. And therefore he doesn't want to say, "I am Yosef." Why not? Why can't he just immediately reveal himself and then everyone will come down? So he says, he doesn't want to do this. And he doesn't want to tell them to bring down the father. And tell them to bring the wagons like they do later on. Of course, the father, Yaakov, is going to come right away. Right? He hasn't seen his son in 22 years. He's going to come immediately. What's the problem with that? Because that already is going to be which dream? Number one or number two? The second dream, right? And he needs the first dream to come true first. Only after the first dream comes true can he then tell them to fulfill the second dream. And he goes on and he explains how this justifies what Yosef does. Because he says, if it was not for this important thing that he needs the dreams to be fulfilled, this would be a very big sin, to pain his father. To leave his father bereaved for so many years, the avel in mourning al Shimon ve'alav, for Shimon and for him, for Yosef. Even if he would have wanted to harm his brothers a little bit, they deserved it. How could he not have mercy on the elderliness of his father? But no, he did everything, he timed it very well. He wanted to fulfill the dreams. He knew they were going to come true. And he goes on and he explains also that this is the reason why Yosef never ever sends a letter home to his father, right? He was the king of Mitzrayim. He could have very easily have contacted Yaakov over the past 22 years and told him, "Hey, I'm here. You don't have to worry anymore. I'm in Mitzrayim." But he doesn't. Why not? Because, again, he wants the dreams to come true. And if he tells Yaakov, then he's going to come right down and the first dream will never come true. Okay, but why does Yosef feel the need for his dreams to come true? Right, I had a dream last week that my house was infested with cockroaches, and it never once dawned on me that I wanted this dream to come true. But as the Nesiv writes, if you look in source number 14, by the brackets, V'otia hakatuv, Torah tells us, Shalom achmat nekima chas v'shalom, mitalechi mahem b'kshuk hazeh. It was not, God forbid, for revenge that he was being so stubborn against them. Ela mishum sheniskar hachalavot shehu ke'i nevua, he remembers the dreams and they are like nevua. Skip down a couple of lines, and he says, if he doesn't try to make his dreams come true, he will be like a Navi who is mevater on his own words. He is not fulfilling his own words. Right? According to the Netziv, it seems that this was a nevuah. Hashem is telling him, he's not just giving him a nice dream, he's telling him, this is your mission. You have to make this dream come true. Right? A very unique interpretation of what the dreams were. Right, but others argue, the Rambam and the Mor Nevuchim, we don't have it here, but he writes that Yosef's dream was an example of Ruach HaKodesh and not Nevuah. Right? Yes, it was important. It was something he should keep in mind. We know that Yaakov, when he hears the dream, says that he remembers the dream. He marks it down. He remembers. He wants to see what's going to happen with it. But it's not something that Yosef has to make sure occurs. It's not a nevuah. The Akedas Yitzchak, also not in your source sheet, writes, Hanotein chalomot yagish pitronam. Right? The person, the one who gives the dreams, he can bring the interpretation about. And Hashem can take care of it. If he decided to make someone dream something and he wants it to come true, he has the power to make it happen. He doesn't need help from the dreamer. So again, a question over here is, why does Yosef feel that it is his responsibility to make his dreams come true? That's approach number two. Approach number three, the tshuva approach. What's it? Oh, tshuva, teshuva, the teshuva approach. I think this is the most commonly quoted answer, that Yosef's intention here was to enable his brothers to do tshuva. But interestingly, when I went to go find the source for this approach, I could not find it amongst the classical commentaries. There are some ideas that were vaguely similar, but as far as I can tell, this seems to be mainly found only in the more modern day Mepharshim. Do you have any specific questions I can go over? Do you have any specific questions I can... Okay. They say that Yosef's goal was to enable his brothers to do complete tshuva. The Nachshoni illustrates this through the sequence of the story, how after each step of Yosef's plot, the brothers admit more and more to what they had done wrong. Okay, it might be helpful to look if you want in your overview of the story. Okay, in the very first encounter with Yosef, Yosef accuses them of being spies. And what do they say in Pasuk Yud Gimel? Vayomru, they say, Shnei Masar Avdecha Achim Anachnu, we are 12 brothers. B'nei Ish Echad, the son of one man, Beretz Kanan. B'nei HaKatan Et Avinu Hayom, the youngest one, Binyamin, is with our father today. Ve'achad Einenu, and one is not with us. The words Ve'achad Einenu are very odd. They leave it very open-ended, very vague. They don't really say what happened to Yosef. And the Nachshoni understands this to be an indirect confession, right? They could have just said, we're 11 brothers. They could have said, we were 12 and one of them died and not explained and said, you know, he just got killed, right? But here, they at least they're admitting there's another brother and they kind of leave it just open-ended as to his present whereabouts. They don't just deny the whole thing. So this is obviously nowhere near actual tshuva, but it's a very small first step. Step number two. After Yosef tells them that they're going to have to leave Shimon there until they bring back Binyamin, the brothers are sitting in jail. They start talking to each other. You see in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayomer Ish Al Achav El Achiv, one man says to his brother, Aval Ashimim Anachnu, we are guilty. Al Achinu, for our brother. Which brother are they talking about here? Not Shimon. They're talking about Yosef. Asher Ra'im Mitzarat Nafsho, we saw the pain of his soul. When he was begging, pleading to us, and we didn't listen. And therefore, this terrible tragedy has come upon us. And then Reuven pipes in, Bayan Reuven, Otam Limor. Hallo Amarti, did I not say Aleichem to you? Al Techatu Bayalid, you shouldn't sin against this boy, Veloshamatim, and you didn't listen. Vegam Dalmohi Ni Nidrash, and now his blood is being avenged. It's very interesting. If you think about it, why in the world are they talking about Yosef now? It's 22 years later. Why? And now they're sitting in jail, and they know they have to go back and leave Shimon. But what's the connection to Yosef? Why are they thinking about Yosef? It's very odd. The Kedas Yitzchak writes that as they're sitting there thinking about having to return to their father without another one of his sons, without Shimon, they suddenly feel a very strong sense of deja vu. They feel these red lights are going off. There's this feeling of how in the world are we going to go back to our father and tell him that we lost another one of his sons. And suddenly they're thrown back to that scene 22 years earlier and realize what they have done wrong at that point. And they don't realize that Yosef is sitting there. Pasuk writes, we're in Pasuk Kaf Gimel. V'hem lo yadu kishama Yosef Hamilitz being Tam, they don't know that Yosef was listening because there was a translator there. They don't know he understands them. And Yosef turns and starts to cry. Why does Yosef cry now? Rashi explains, because he sees that the brothers are on their way to tshuva. They're beginning to confess for what they had done wrong. That's step number two in their tshuva process. Step number three. Yosef secretly returns the money to their bags, and they find it on the way home, and they're terrified. But what are they scared of? You think they're, what are they terrified of? They're scared that they're going to get in trouble when they come back. They're going to be accused of stealing the money. But what is their reaction? If you look in the pasuk, kafchet, it says, at the end, vayachardu isha lachav, all the brothers, they're trembling to each other. Lemor saying, ma zot asa elokim lanu, what is this that Hashem has done to us? They're recognizing that this is something coming from Hashem. This is a punishment for what they had done to Yosef. The Aksav HaKabbalah actually punctuates it differently, and he writes, Ma'azot Asa? Asa Elokim Lanu. What is this? Ma'azot, what is this? Asa Elokim Lanu. Hashem did this to us. Right? They're recognizing that this is a punishment. That's the next step in their process of tshuva. And finally, in the last step of his plot, Yosef places the silver goblet into the Binyamin sack. And when Yosef's servants find it there, Yehuda gets up and he says, in Parak Mem Gimel, Pasuk Tet Zayin, so he says, "Vayomer Yehuda, Manu Marla Aduni, what can I say to my master? Manu Daber, what can we speak? Manu Stadak, how can we justify ourselves? Haloki Matza et Avon Avdecha. Hashem has found us guilty. He has found our sin. Ninu Avadim Laduni, we are going to be slaves to our master. Gama Nachnu, Gama Sher Nimsa Agaviva Diado. We all are going to be slaves, not just Binyamin. We all deserve it." And when Yehuda says this, Yosef realizes that they're not confessing for taking the goblet, because he knows they didn't take the goblet. And therefore, what are they confessing? They're confessing for something much bigger. They're confessing for the whole selling of Yosef. And at that point, as Yehuda keeps going on and on in his speech, Yosef can no longer contain himself, and again, he starts to cry, because he recognizes that they have done tshuva, and he's ready to reveal himself to them. That's the Nachshoni. Nechama Leibowitz, though, takes this one step further, and she says, the true tshuva requires more than just confession and admission of sin. It also requires actions. She quotes the Rambam, which you have back in source number. But, okay, the Rambam writes, Ezehu tshuva gmura, what is considered to be real tshuva? Ze shabali yado davar sha'avarbo, when something comes to him, something that he has a sin that he has transgressed comes before him, the afshar biado la'asoto, and he's able to do this sin once again, upirash, but he separates himself, but lo asa, and he doesn't do it with nei tshuva, because he has done tshuva, lo miyira, v'lo mikishman koach, not because he's afraid, not because he's too weak, then that is considered to be true tshuva. When he's placed into the same exact circumstances and he doesn't sin, then we know that he has completely repented. So how is he going to get them to do true tshuva in this case? Right? Obviously, the fact that they are going to act nicely to Yosef now and not throw him into a pit does not really prove anything. Right? Yosef is now second in command in Egypt. They are coming to him. Their only chance for getting any food for them to survive. So obviously they're going to act very nicely to Yosef now. That doesn't prove anything. So what does he have to do? He has to build up a test case. He has to make some kind of parallel case. And therefore, he chooses Binyamin. Right? She writes, in source number 6, Kitzarich hayal havi b'mitzukat achiv Binyamin, she has to bring into trouble their brother Binyamin, ben Rachel kamohu, he's similar to him because he is the son of Rachel, ha'omei tachtav, he's almost replacing Yosef, ahuv aviv, he is the loved one of his father, muvdal mikol achav kamohu az, he is separated from his brothers just like he had been then. Skip down to the next bracket, a few lines down. Im lo yazvuhu az b'tzarato, if they don't leave him now in his pain, by yomru and say, lo ashamnu, it's very easy for them. They very easily could say right now, Yosef wants to take Binyamin captive. They say, lo ashamnu, it's not our fault. Onesu, it was forced against us. No kach meitano, he was taken from us. Limro chichananu, bikashnu lachziro lano, even though we begged Yosef, or the head of Mitzrayim, we begged him, we pleaded with him to give him back to us. Right? They easily could have tried to get themselves off the hook. But in lo kach yasu, if they don't do this, Im yimanu lachzur biladav, if they refuse to leave without him. Im itana achlatam lo lashuv el avihem shimit ve'achad ben Rachel inenu imahem. If they are strong and firm in their decision not to return to their father a second time without another son of Rachel with them. Ela im luchanim yulim sur nafsham alav, if they're ready to be musar nefesh, to put themselves on the line for him, then he continues, but I guess didn't make it to the source sheet, continues and says that then he knows that they are really bali tshuva gmurim, right? They are really, have really done tshuva. Okay, Rav Yaakov Meidan, who's one of the new Rosh Yeshiva and Gush, expands on this idea, and he says that the reason why, you notice in the storyline, Yosef gives presents out to the brothers, and he gives Binyamin five times as many right before the whole incident with the silver goblet. Why does he do this? Because he's trying to arouse as much jealousy as possible against Yosef. The brothers are going to see how he's favoring Yosef, and then the situation will be a little bit more parallel to what it was 22 years earlier. He also puts the cup in his bag because he wants the brothers to get upset and angry with Binyamin. They'll feel like it's Binyamin's fault. He's the one who got them in trouble with the Egyptian authorities. And in this way, he can try to make the situation as similar as possible so that they can really have the opportunity to do real tshuva. And this is a very nice approach, because everything fits very neatly. But again, we are left with a strikingly similar question as the one we had before. It's very nice that Yosef wanted to help his brothers out. But since when is it his responsibility to get his brothers to do tshuva? And wouldn't it make more sense for Hashem to test them out and see if they have fully repented and not Yosef? So far we've had three approaches. Right? We had number one was the approach Yosef was trying to punish them, to help them atone for their sins through Yisurin. Number two was to make his dreams come true. And number three was to enable them to do tshuva. And so far, our main question that has come out of these three approaches was, these are very nice, but why does Yosef feel like it's his responsibility to do any of these things? Approach number four, the reconciliation approach. Okay, Yosef really and truly wants to reunite with his brothers. But you can imagine that after the tragic events of the past, there is a lot of healing that needs to be done. 22 years have gone by where Yosef has lived cast away from his family. And if he's going to reunite with his family, it has to be a real reunification. And therefore, he needs to test his brothers to see how they feel about him now. Right? He needs to know whether they still hate him or whether there can really be a real reunification that they can bond again as a family. This approach is found in a bunch of commentaries. It's in the Ramban, the Barbanel, Kedias Yitzchak, or Hirsch, more. And these commentaries are often cited as the source for the tshuva approach that we just spoke about earlier. But when you look at their words, you'll notice that there's a very big difference between the two approaches. Right? In both cases, Yosef is putting the brothers to the test, but it's for a very different goal. In the first case, he's trying to get them to do tshuva in the global sense. And over here, he's really just on a personal level trying to analyze how they feel towards him, what the situation is. So now let's look at some of these commentaries inside. The Akedas Yitzchak in source number 7. Right. Nir'eh, it seems, shekavanat Yosef, intention of Yosef haita gam kein batfila levduk bahem im hayu adayin b'sinatam loto. He wanted to check and see whether they still hate him, o im nachmo mimaseim, or whether they have changed their ways. V'hu lo ratza shetzachin lo ze im lo v'she yivchanam al davar achiv benimo. The only way he could think of how to do this is by testing them with his brother, Binyamin. They wrote Mayasu, Kishiru Otobitsar, when they see what they're going to do when they see him in pain, Obasakana, or in danger. Blazeh miyad chashav al yivat hakavi, and therefore he thinks of the whole plot with the cup. Ela shalo ayasham Binyamin, but Binyamin wasn't there yet. Vutzrach litolel alilot, therefore he has to make up all these excuses, vila galgel biyatan lasham, and make up a way to get Binyamin down there. Okay, so according to the Kedas Yitzchak, the reason for this whole entire story was he has to find a way to get Binyamin down there and then plant a cup into Binyamin's sack so that Binyamin will be in danger. And then he can see whether the brothers are going to stick up for Binyamin or not, and he'll know, based on how they feel towards Binyamin, that will be his way of testing how they feel towards him. Rapersh expands on this. And he says that merely reuniting with his brothers would not have been enough, right? They could have been reunited on the surface, but deep down, there would be deep feelings of mistrust between them, and it would not be a real reunification. Right, so he has to plan a drastic plot in order to change their perceptions of each other. Look in source number 8. Da'otehem ze al ze chayavot lishtanot b'tachlit. Their thoughts and perceptions of each other need to change completely. Leman yishur b'neihem yachas l'lavi hadzuk, in order to make a very warm, caring relationship between them. She'im lo kein, if it wasn't for this, gam ilu huchzar el mishpachto, even if he returns to his family on the surface level, hayahu avud mishpachto, he's really going to be lost to his family. Mishpachto avudam imenu, and his family will be lost from him. Lo hayaze ela tivi shayab libo elachav. It's only natural that he would have in his heart against his brothers. Shazachar shichut libam v'itchananu alehem v'lo shamu. He remembers the harshness of their hearts when he was begging to them to save him when he was in the pit. V'lo shamu, they didn't listen to him. V'lo itchashchu gam b'tzar avihim, they also didn't care about the pain of their father. Zechron ze yuchal limachob in libo. This memory can only be erased from his heart. Rak l'kishayochiach ki achein hishtanu b'tachli. Only when he knows that they have really changed. Okay, so therefore he needs to see that they are completely changed, that they are not willing to separate a son from a father again, that they're going to do anything to bring Benjamin back to Yaakov. And it goes on, not here, but it goes on, and he says, on the other hand, the brothers, how do the brothers feel towards Yosef? When they last left him, right, Yosef was this mean kid who was always tattling on them and trying to show off, and now it's only worse. Right now he's in this position of power, he can do anything he wants against them. They probably would feel very scared of him, right? They are very afraid of what he might do to them. And therefore, if they are going to reunite for real and really feel feelings of trust towards each other, he has to show them that he's not going to harm them, that he feels like a brother towards them. And therefore, what does he do? He has to first show them how much power he has. Right? He puts on this whole entire act, showing them what he really could have done to them, show him how he is really in charge and he can do whatever he wants to them. But then, at the end, show them that even though he has that power, he's not going to use it against them. And only when he does that can they let down their guards and feel a feeling of trust towards him. Personally, I like this last approach the best because this is something that was really Yosef's place to do. Right? He's not responsible to punish his brothers or to make them do tshuva. And he's also not responsible to make his dreams come true. But what he is responsible for is to make amends with his brothers. He needs to do whatever he can to achieve real shalom between himself and his brothers. The other missions are extremely important, but they are godly missions. This is an important goal in the human realm. Are we all together so far? You guys got all the pictures? Okay, but the question that always really bothered me the most is that issue of why does the Torah not tell us what Yosef's motives were? Right, all these answers are not found really in the Torah. You can find little hints to them, but the Torah never tells us. Right? Maybe you can say that it makes sense the Torah doesn't want to tell us at the beginning of the story because the Torah wants to put us sort of into the story, that we can feel what the same confusion the brothers are feeling, and we can be part of the story. But then you would at least expect that at the end, the Torah should then explain to us what was going on. Right? How can the Torah go on and on with this elaborate plot and never ever inform us of what the purpose was? So what I wanted to suggest is that perhaps the Torah couldn't tell us because there are so many different underlying layers to the story, right? There's no one simple answer to the question of what's going on. If you would ask Yosef, he might tell you that what's he trying to do? He's trying to establish real peace between the brothers. But that would not be a complete answer because Hashem had his motives also. Now Yosef was a mastermind in trying to devise a plot to establish peace. But Hashem is the true mastermind. Right? He was able to accomplish a myriad of important goals through one series of events. In addition to Yosef's goal being achieved, the brothers were also punished for their misdeeds. They were given the opportunity to do tshuva, and Yosef's dreams were also fulfilled. Now, each of the approaches that we discussed this morning are correct, but it is Hashem who is to be credited for them and not Yosef. And when a person is able to kill two birds with one stone, that's considered to be a great feat, something that we're very proud of. But in the godly realm, Hashem needs to orchestrate events such that millions of things can happen with one action. So for the Torah to inform us that the goal of Yosef's plan was to create true peace between the brothers would be limiting the true ingenuity of the plan. The Torah needs it to leave it vague so that the Mefarshim And really, every single reader throughout the generations can slowly uncover more and more depth to the story. I think this is a very important message that comes up all the time in Tanakh, but I think also in our own lives, that often we do certain actions in order to accomplish very specific goals, but little do we realize that we're only seeing the surface level, and Hashem is using these actions, our actions, to affect many, many different goals. It ended kind of early, so if anyone has any questions. Right, you're pointing out that it's a very, very stark contrast that in this story where there was so much going on and it's so mysterious, you would expect to find, you know, the Torah would tell us what's going on, whereas in last week's parsha, we do see other people's motives. And it's just a very stark contrast when you see them next to each other. Her question is that we still have the same questions with the fourth approach, because it's very nice that he wants to achieve peace, but you know, is it really justified to do everything he did to, you know, to scare his brother so much and to accuse him of all these things, and then also to leave his father again, still bereft of his son and Shimon also for so long? Is that justified just because he wants to achieve peace between the brothers? So I think there's a lot of questions. I don't think to really have answered up anything really here. The story has a lot of questions to it, but one thing that I did see is that I think it was Rav Yaakov Maidan writes in one of his articles that writes that it's not really a good question, even though you would think that's a valid question. But he says that when you think about it, really, it's not just his own personal peace. This was like. The 12 Shvatim, they need to be united as one unit. Like it's an important goal for the rest of Judaism as we know it. And if they're not going to be together, then like we don't have anything. And therefore, to say like, oh, well, we feel bad for Yaakov, or maybe, I mean, he's talking about that specifically, but maybe even your friends also, that like it's not nice to the brothers, is really, it doesn't really fit there, because it's such an important goal that you have to do anything you can. He gives an example, let's say, of, he says with Rabbi Akiva. Right, so Rabbi Akiva, right, his father-in-law didn't want him to go learn, right? But if his wife Rachel would have said, well, you know, like my father doesn't really want him to go, so I shouldn't go, so then we never would have Rabbi Akiva. You can't ask the question because the goal is so important that, you know, little things like letting Yaakov be in pain a little bit longer are justified, meaning that Yaakov would have wanted it to be that way. He wouldn't want, he would want to suffer a couple more years just so that he would know in the end that the brothers are really united and he has unity in the family. That's just one answer, so I don't know, but it's a good question. Right, so I think there's a Rashi there. I'm sorry. She asked, right, with the interpretation, the explanation that this was a fulfillment of the dreams. He said, but we know that Rachel wasn't alive, so she never comes down. So we already see that the dream is never really fulfilled. So how does that fit with that explanation? So you say it doesn't really get fulfilled over here, it gets fulfilled much later on. I think also that...
Would that be
yeah, Definitely possible. I mean, then you couldn't use that. Then you couldn't use this answer because then Yosef is not going to be able to make it fulfilled. But although I guess maybe he didn't know Rachel was. I don't know, but also, I was going to say, that also brings up, I mean, at that point, I think the person talked about this whole issue of, well, maybe it's because, you know, the other words are going to come down instead of Rachel. And I think also, I don't remember exactly, so I'm sounding a little vague, but I think that they talk about that in every dream, there's always some amount of, not everything is true. There's some truth to it, and then there's some parts that are just storyline. Right, exactly. Right, so that's what some of the person who are, some people who argue against this approach say that. She says, does anyone say that Yosef actually sinned? I actually didn't see anyone saying that. Right. Because even if you want to say, like, he just did it because it was punishment, like, even the ones that say it's punishment, they don't say it's revenge. They say that it was a very noble cause, that he's trying to punish them to help them absolve themselves of their sins. Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe just because we never see him ever being admonished for it. Something like it just seems like this was part of the storyline. It's supposed to happen this way. Like he had something in mind to do it, and he does it, and you never see that this was something wrong. So I guess that's probably why they don't say it. But. Which is why I concluded in the end that I just didn't see how that meaning. It's very nice that you want your brothers to do tshuva, but can you really put someone in a situation to try to get them to tshuva? Usually you say, like, fine, Hashem will make it that happen that way, but you don't know what's going to happen, so you really are kind of, like, you know, if you're a child, an example, like, right. You're not going to set your child up for the same problem. Let's see if they can pass this time. You don't want to put them in that position. So, yes, I agree with that. I don't really understand exactly why it would be, like, how he can do it. Right, good. I was thinking, she says, it's very interesting that at the end, we do see after Yaakov dies, that Yosef's brothers come and say to him, oh, you know, Yaakov said before he died that you shouldn't take revenge, you shouldn't get upset with us. So obviously they are still very scared. They don't really feel a feeling of trust towards him, which is what I was thinking when I was with approach number four. He's trying to make real trust between them, but obviously it wasn't complete because they don't feel, you know, 100% secure with him. But I guess that only indicates how much more it would have been. Like, it just kind of shows us, like, of course, you can't just expect them to, like, come back together and now everything's okay. Like, you have to, you know, do as much as you can to bring real peace. I mean, some people do talk about the whole idea of Yosef having done, like, there's a lot of just, like, stories of, like, individual stories of Yehuda doing tshuva and Reuven doing tshuva and how that kind of emerges different leaders and different ideas like that. Yes? She asked that we know that Asara Haruge Machos are supposed to be as a punishment for the brothers having sold Yosef, and apparently that would seem like they actually hadn't really done complete tshuva, because otherwise why are they being punished for it? I don't know, there's a few different directions we can take it. I mean, first of all, do we know that it was really, I know that when the enemies were taking this out against them, they said that it was against Yosef, but do we know that that's really, like, Hashem was doing it for that purpose, for real? I'm not sure. I mean, I knew it starts out that way, saying, like, what? Okay. And also, it could be that even the tshuva that they did or the punishment that they got wasn't enough. I don't know. It's a good question. but not telling his father that he was alive. So again, that's the question is, does he ever do tshuva? Does Yosef ever do tshuva for not telling his father for all those years that he was alive, causing his father so much suffering? So again, that's what all of the freshmen are trying to grapple with. Did he do something wrong? Right. So you're assuming that he did something wrong, but maybe if there really was such an important goal that could only be achieved that way, right? Like for example, if the dreams, if the Ramban writes, if the dreams could only be fulfilled by Yaakov not know, like he needs Binyamin to come down without Yaakov, so he had to do it in order for the dreams to come true. He'll say that it's a greater goal. Meaning he needs it was a nevuah, he has to make it come true. That's the thing he had to do. You can argue with it, but that's what the Ramban would say over there. What else did I say? Rav Yoel ben Nun, he writes a whole article about this, and he claims that Yosef, the whole time, Yosef thought that Yaakov was in on the plot. He never knew that the brothers had lied to Yaakov saying that he had been killed. So he has a very fascinating approach explaining that the whole time he was thinking, why is Yaakov not coming to save me? He knows that I was sold down to Egypt. Why isn't he coming to find me? Like he has all the resources in the world. He could find me. He obviously also doesn't like me. And therefore, only now, when he finds out, when he hears in Yehuda's speech, Yehuda says, oh, and we told our father, Taruk Sarafti, that Yosef, he had been killed, then he realizes Yaakov wasn't part of the plot, and that's when he cries and starts to reveal himself. It's another approach. Okay. I guess that's it.